season or winter season. I'd like to give special thanks to the members of our education committee who made our lecture series possible and a great success.
First, Rabbi Yaakov Shulman, and in alphabetical order, Alan Blumenthal, Jeremy Chernikov, Francis Cooper, Elliot Fader, Chaim Goldberg, Baruch Noble, Rabbi Iris Bodek, and Rai Zaitchik. Thank you to all. Now it's my privilege to introduce our Mara d'Asra, Rabbi Yaakov Shulman. I would like to ask everyone to turn off their cell phone at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard, and a good vach to everyone. Welcome again to the Talmud Torah Flatbush. It's a pleasure to see everyone here again tonight. We had Rav Pesach Kron with us here a couple of years back. Also had a large crowd at that time. Tonight's topic is what's in a Jewish name. Now, I was thinking to myself, the name Pesach, the Mefarshim say, is made up of two words, Pesach, the mouth speaks, and that's his Jewish name. And we know, yes, also a lot, speaks a lot, Pesach Yosef. And indeed, our generation is privileged that we have a homegrown Maggid who narrates stories to us, and Musar, and Hashkafa, sometimes a little bit of humor interjected, I understand. And it's indeed a privilege to have a Reb Pesach, someone who is Pesach. My Zayda, Zichron Levracha, grew up in Slutsk and used to tell me, at Geherz, from the Slutsker Magid, from the Minsker Magid, there were Magidim in Europe that used to have great asifas and gave over the Dvar Hashem in a way that was palatable to people. It went down easy. Stories, hashkafa, a little sharp story occasionally, a little self-humor. Well, that was back in Europe. Here, we're still the same. We need those people as well. And Baruch Hashem, tonight we have one of the premier Magidim who are in the old style of a Magid to enlighten us and give us Divrei Chizuk v'Hisayrus. We find, as far as a name, at the very beginning of Va'era, that Hashem tells Klal Yisrael, Va'era el Avraham el Yitzchak v'el Yaakov b'keil shakoi. The name of God that was known to our avos was the name Keil Shakai, which the Ramban explains means die, sufficient. I created a world, Olam HaTeva. The world operates the way it is. There was never a need to show a nes lamala min HaTeva. Then came the generation of the Jews in Mitzrayim, and now we need the Shem Havaya. We need a new name by which to identify our relationship with Hashem, and that is the Shem Ushmi Hashem. Lo nodati lahem was not known even to the Avos. They did not require lamala min HaTeva. But now, says Hashem, I need to reveal this hidden name that was not yet known. As I'm sure we'll hear tonight, many different names, the reasons for them, the underlying reasons. As a theme, we should know that we as Klal Yisrael emulate Hashem. We are Mekayim, the mitzvah, the halachta bidrachav. You shall walk in the way of Hashem, indeed adopt the ways of Hashem. So that if Hashem reveals His name as necessary, our names must have meaning to us as well. It is well known in the Svarim that parents when they name their child, have a type of Ruach HaKodesh that they are able to foresee the essence of that child, their son, their daughter, and give a name that captures that central meaning. We as Klal Yisrael have that name of Yisrael that we were able through our progenitor Yaakov Avinu to withstand and fight off the Malach of Esav, and this we carry proudly, the name of Yisrael and Yehudi with us until the end of history. So with all of these thoughts in mind, I'd like to introduce one of the best known speakers of our day, certainly one of the most beloved, the Maggid of our time, Rabbi Pesach Kron.
It's a great schus to have been invited once again to come to speak to all of you. I thank Rabbi Yaakov Shulman, the Mor de Asra. As I mentioned, the first time that I had the opportunity to speak in this shul, our families go back many, many wonderful years. My father, Alav Shalom, learned in Yisrael. My father was Rabbi Avram Zelik. And Rabbi Shulman's father, Yibad L'Chaim, Rabbi Shemayo Shulman, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a genius in Torah. Those of you who have had the opportunity to meet him and to hear him, my father and he were very, very close. And throughout the years, literally, we grew up together, the families. So to be able to see how Rabbi Yankov has rebuilt this shul and rebuilt a great interest in this neighborhood is something that everyone who knows him is very proud of. The Hecht family as well is a family that I go back with many, many years. And so I hope tonight we'll all be able to be inspired together. In 1976, a watershed event happened in Klal Yisrael. That was the year that the first art scroll publication came to the public. Some of you who have read the introduction to Megillas Esther are familiar. Rav Meir Zlotowitz had a very dear friend. He was actually a mutual friend. Both Rav Meir Zlotowitz and this person who passed away, Meir Fogel, were a few years older than I am. We were all in Camp Aguda together. And I remember Rav Meir was a tremendous artist, Rav Meir Zlotowitz, and that's why he really started Art Scroll. Art Scroll was the company that made wedding ksubos and invitations. It was called Art Scroll. And what happened was he had this friend, Meir Fogel, who I, as I mentioned, was in camp. Meir Fogel got married, unfortunately passed away young and had no children. And so therefore, Lezecha Nishmas, his friend, Meir Zlotowitz, decided to write Megillas Esther. At that time, Rav Nosson Sherman was a principal in the Stolina Yeshiva. He had written numerous articles in the Jewish Observer. And so together they put it together. Rav Meir Zlotowitz wrote the commentary on Megillas Esther. Nosson Sherman wrote the overview, and a fellow who worked in the Art Scroll office, Shia Branda, he did the layout, and it took over Klal Yisrael by storm. Everybody who read it was just so absolutely amazed at the clarity and the way it was presented. It was just a tremendous Kiddushim Shemayim. They sold so many right away that within a few months came Shavuos, and then they wrote Rus for Shavuos because we read Rus on Shavuos, and then they started writing on Eicha for Tisha B'Av. And I was very enamored by this because I always enjoyed writing. Those of you who know me personally know that I was very close to my mother, La Shalom, who just passed away a year and a half ago. She was the one who gave me this love for writing. And I never felt that I really had an outlet. I had an article here and there in the Olamenu and the Jewish Observer. But here I thought, wow, this is unbelievable. I'd love to write for these guys. So I called Rav Meir Zlotowitz and I met him right here in Flatbush. We met in the driveway of Rav David Cohen. And I said to him, you know, I'd love to write. He said, what do you want to write? Whatever you write it, we'll edit it and we'll print it. I said, well, I'd like to write Kehelas. He said, no, Kehelas is one of the Chumash Megillas. We're doing that in-house. You can pick anything you want. So, you know, sometimes you have an idea and it's an awful idea. Here's one of the worst ideas that I ever came up with. I said, you know, how about if I write Mishlei? He said, well, Mishlei, that's a great idea. So why do I say it's one of the worst ideas? Because what I did was that I went to the 42nd Street Library, I took out so many Svarim on Mishlei, I bought 10 Svarim on Mishlei, and I decided I would try to see if I could write on Mishlei. I just picked out Perek Yud Aleph, and I saw that every Pasuk is a Sefer in itself. Oh man, this is going to take over my life. As a matter of fact, just to show you how bad the idea was, Art Scroll has literally finished the commentary on the entire Shas. They're halfway through Yerushalmi, and now, after 30 years of Art Scroll, they just finished Mishlei. So you can imagine how long it took to get somebody to do Mishlei. So it was a terrible idea, and of course, after 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I saw that it was going to be impossible. So I was disappointed, and I figured, what in the world am I ever going to write for them? But I would love to write for them. But after the Megillahs came out, they started writing on topics. And when they started writing on different topics, on Kaddish, on Aseret HaDibros, and other things, on Yom Tovim, I said to myself, wow, I bet you nobody's going to write for them on Bris Milah. I'm a Moel. Who could write better than me as far as a book on Bris Milah? I'm a Moel. I know what has to be in a book. So I called them up and I said, you know, I would love to write on Bris Milah. So they said, well, we just spoke to somebody, and he's going to do it for us. I said, what are you talking about, Rav Meir? I couldn't get angry at him because, you know, I didn't want he should, you know, just throw me out of the office. But I said, Rav Meir, you know I'm a Moel. You know I enjoy writing. Listen, if it's not definite, if you haven't committed to that guy, let me give you a presentation of a book. I'll write a whole outline, and you'll see, because only a Moel can write. The guy you hired is not the guy you were speaking to. They didn't hire him yet, thank goodness. But, you know, only a Moel could present what has to be done for a Bris Milah book. He said, okay, you give us an outline and give us a chapter of whatever you decide and we'll take a look at it. So I go home and I said to my mother, Ma, we got to write something that's going to be so outstanding, you know, and that, you know, that they're going to sign up right away. So it took about, you know, a month and a half or whatever. I gave him a whole outline of the Sefer, what I felt the Sefer should have. And he gave me a very interesting directive. He said, if you do this book, you have to write such a book in English on Bris Milah that nobody in his right mind will think that they would dare write another book for 20 years after your book comes out on Bris Milah, because you covered everything. So I decided, you know what? Okay, fine. So it's not only going to be the laws and about jaundice and about the Sephardish customs and the Ashkenazish customs, but I would be marchabit. I would write on many different things. And I presented the chapter, and they accepted it, and, you know, we agreed that I was going to do it. So one of the things that I decided that I wanted to write about, because every Moel, not only me, every Moel is involved with names. And that's the most fascinating, one of the most fascinating parts of being a Moel, because every person has a story about their names. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you a very interesting gematria. The word shame, which means name, is equal to 340. And the word sefer, which means a story or a book, also is equal to 340. Because every single one of you here could write a book about the name that you had, or the name you should have had, or the name that you argued about with your parents and grandparents and in-laws and outlaws, and the name that should have been given, or could have been given, or would have been given if they would have let you do whatever you wanted to do. Well, we're going to talk about all these things. So every name is a story. And so therefore, I decided that I would write a whole section about names. And then one night, and this was the turning point in this book, and this was the turning point in my involvement with Yiddish names. One night, I was doing research, and I saw something from the Rebbe Rav Elimelech. In Parshas Bamidbar, he mentions that when you name a child after someone, there is a connection forever from the person's neshama, from the person who had the name, to the child that now carries that name. Those neshamas are connected forever. That's why it's very important to name after tzaddikim, to name after good people, and that's why we don't name anybody Esav or Korach, and of course there's a whole discussion how we can name anybody Yishmael, because the Rabbi Nachmanel says that he did tshuva at the end, but otherwise how could you name somebody Yishmael? But we have a Rabbi Yishmael, because obviously Yishmael did tshuva at the end. But you only name after good people, because there's a connection, the neshamas are connected. So I was very moved by this thought, and I wanted to write it in the paragraph that I was writing. But it was in the early 1980s. I didn't have a computer. So I had to take out the page from the typewriter. And I wrote the word in Hebrew, neshama. And as I wrote the word neshama, my mouth dropped open. Because what are the two middle letters of the word neshama? Shame. Isn't that incredible? So in the neshama itself, in the word neshama itself, you have a hint that it's through the name that the neshamas are connected. So I was thinking when I saw this, I just could not believe it. How many thousands of times did we say the word neshama? Whoever thought of that? And then I was thinking, so what's the nun and the hay on the outside of the word neshama? So then it occurred to me, and then somebody showed it to me later in the Zohar HaKadosh, that's the Ner Hashem. And that's based on the Pasuk, Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. The Ner Hashem, the spark of Hashem, is the neshama of a person. We all have that chelek, elikami mal, within us. That's all in the word neshama. The nun and the hay on the outside, that's the Ner Hashem. And the middle is shame. That's the name. As a matter of fact, as Rabbi Yaakov mentioned, the name literally is a definition in Yiddishkeit. And we see that right in the beginning of creation. You see, in English, this is a hand. But it could have been a knee, it could have been a head, it could have been a nose. What makes this a hand? But in Lashon Kodesh, all these things are different. As a matter of fact, the Pasuk tells us, in Bereshis Beis, Pasuk Yutes, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim min Adama Kol Chayas Hasoda. Hashem created all the animals from the field, Veskol Oif Hashamayim, and all the birds, Vayovei El HaAdam, and He brought them to Adam Lirois Mayikra Loi, to see what He is going to call it. Vachol Asher Yikra Loi HaAdam, and that which Adam called it, Nefesh Chayu Hushmoy, that's the name. In other words, that's the definition. Adam defined the animal, and we will see two very interesting examples that Rabbeinu Bachaya brings. The Aryeh is called a lion. Why is it Aryeh? In English, it could have been a lion, a tiger, or a zebra. But in Hebrew, it can't be anything but an Aryeh, because Aryeh has the Yud and the Hey in it. Yud and Hey is Hashem Hashem. Hashem is the king of the world. The lion is the king of the jungle. That's why the Aryeh has in it the Yud and the Hey. And then he brings Chamor. Chamor comes from the word Chomer, matter, simple. Simple matter. The Chamor is considered the dumbest and the simplest of all the animals. Not only that, there's a pasuk that uses the expression chomer sa'orim, a measurement of weight. That's what the essence of a donkey is, to carry a heavy load. Chamor gorem. So therefore, that's why the chamor is called that, because the chamor is chomer, simple matter. And the Aryeh is because he's the king of the jungle. I'll tell you something so remarkable. I saw this in a clay yokar. And later on, my son-in-law showed it to me in a medrash. It's absolutely incredible. Adam not only named the animals, but he named his wife. And when did he name his wife? It's interesting. After the Aveira, the Torah tells us that he named his wife. So look what the Pasuk says. Vayikra ha'adam shem ishtoi Chava. He called his wife Chava. Ki hi ha'isa aim kol choy. Because she was the mother of all living beings that would come from her. So the Klei Yokar says, obviously, if she was Eim Kol Choy, she should have been called Chaya. Chaya is Eim Kol Choy. Choy is Chaya. So the Klei Yokar and the Medrash tell us that was her name originally. Chaya was really her name. But only after the Aveira, Adam gave her a new name. What was the new name? Chava. You know why? Because in Aramaic, Chava comes from the word Chivya, which means a snake. And he wanted to remember Nebuch. He didn't call her a snake in the grass. But he called her Chava because it would be remembered forever that it was through this snake. And what happened after that, that Misa came to the world and the course of history was changed forever. That's why the name is only after the Aveira, Chava. But really, her original name was Chaya. Now, by human body parts, it's the exact same thing. There is a Kedusha in Lashon Kodesh. Lashon Kodesh is not Hebrew. It's two different languages. But in Lashon Kodesh, in the Halakha language of the Torah, you will see now amazing things. I had the opportunity, a year and a half ago, to work with my dear son-in-law, Hananya Kramer. And we worked on a project called Design a Perfect, the Miraculous Workings of the Human Body. It's an interactive CD-ROM. Anybody who wants it can call me after this year. We're reprinting now. We've given out 30,000 of them, literally to schools all across the country. We're reprinting now 10,000. Anybody who wants it, it's free. Somebody sponsored it to show the godless of Hashem through the human body. And what we did was we interviewed doctors literally across America, only from doctors. Dermatologists, psychologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, every single doctor, except obviously obstetrics and urology, that you can't talk about, Barabim, but every part of the body. These doctors show the greatness of Hashem. When Dr. Melman of Cincinnati, the cardiologist, says Asher Yotzar about parts of the body that's open and closed, he's thinking about the heart valves. And when Dr. Abitan talks about the lungs, and when he says Asher Yotzar, he's thinking about those parts of the lungs that remain open and have to remain closed so that a person should be able to breathe. It's incredible. But as I was doing these interviews, all of a sudden I began to realize, wait a second, every body part is a definition of two or three different things. For example, the word, how do you say liver in Hebrew? Kaved. What is the heaviest organ in the body? It's the liver. It's not the lungs, it's not the heart, it's not the ribs. The liver is the heaviest. That's why it's called kaved. Yad is begamatria 14, yud and dalet. Watch this, you got 14 joints here. 3, 6, 9, 12, 13, 14. Oizen, why is your ear called oizen? Why isn't it called anything else? You know why? Because it comes from maznayim, from the balance. If the inner cochlea, the inner part of the ear, is out of sync, then a person loses his balance. Ayon, why is your eye called an ayon? Because it's a mayon. Your eyes are always wet. The person always has tears in his eyes. And if a person's eyes are dry, they have to get what's called drops, so false tears, so that they should be able, so the eyes should always be moist. My favorite, of course, is the shinayim, the teeth. I spoke to a few different dentists, so I said, why are teeth called shinayim? So one dentist said, it's simple, you get two sets, shinayim, right? You get one, right? Yeah, upper, lower, you know, younger, older. And then another dentist said a terrific thing. He said it comes from the word shinui. Shinui means change. What changes the composure of food so that it should come into your body, you should be able to digest it? It's the teeth. If you had no teeth, how are you going to get that steak down, right? You know, you could get chocolate mousse maybe, but how are you going to get the cake and the fish and everything else, right? The only way is shin. It comes from shinui. And then Dr. Leibovic from Los Angeles told me something unbelievable. The Gemara says, Piv v'liboy shoven. Your mouth and your heart have to be the same. What does that mean? Can't be a faker. What you say with your mouth, you have to believe with your heart. And what you say, what you feel with your heart, that's what you say. Piv v'liboy shoven. So he said to me that, you know what the latest findings are? Those people that have gum disease most likely have cardiac disease. Piv v'liboy shoven. Isn't that incredible? The mouth and the heart are the same. So I went to my Rebbe, Rav David Cohen, and I said, you know, he lives right around here. I said, Rav David, you know, what do you say about dumb and dumbim? Money and blood. Is there any connection? He said, yeah, they both circulate. And then he said, it's hard to get people to donate either one of them. So let's come back now to names. Names of individuals. We know that the minig in Klal Yisrael is that you give a name at the bris. So why do we name a little boy at the bris? So, Svarim write, because we find that Avraham Avinu was given a new name by his bris. Till then he was Avram, and then the Pasuk tells us, in Bereishis Yud Zayin, Pasuk Kei, V'lo Yikore Yoyde Shimcha Avram, V'hoya Shimcha Avraham, the letter He was added to Avraham. And that's why at his bris he had a new name. That's why we give a child a name at the bris. But something else happened very interesting before that bris. Not only was Avraham Avinu's name changed, his wife's name was changed. And we all know, Vayomer Elokim al Avraham, again, Bereishis Yud Zayin, now it's Pasuk Tezvav, Sarai Yishtecho, your wife Sarai, Loi Sikre Shemoi Sarai. She's not going to be called Sarai anymore. She's Sarah Shemoi. She's also getting the hay. So I was wondering, Hashem, you used already the hey for Avram. There's no other letter you could find for Sarah? Why do you have to use the same letter? What's the significance in the hey that is both by Avram and by Sarah? And I believe I know the answer. The answer is, the Gemara tells us that the world was created with a hey. It's based on a posik. Eila told us Hashemayim va'oretz is in Bereishis Beis posik dalad. Eila told us Hashemayim what is behi barom when Hashem created them. So the Gemara says behei barom. He created them with a hay. What does that mean? He created them with a hay. So some of Farshim say that's the easiest letter to say. See, if you want to say shin, you got to have teeth. Right? You want to say men, you got to have lips. You want to say ches, especially if you're a Sephardi, you need a whole throat, right? Ches, or however they say it, right? Okay? But hey, it's just, hey, just breathe it out. Hey, it's easy. You don't need anything. Just a throat, just a voice. So that's what the Gemara says. Hey, behei barom, Hashem created it with a hey. It was very easy. But I believe that the answer for this hey for Avram and for Sarai is a different answer. Because the Gemara Menachos tells us an amazing thing. That the whole world is created like a hay, and if we could picture a hay doesn't have a floor. That means every person, if they don't watch themselves, if they're not careful, they can fall down to Sheol Tachtis. There's no end to how far a person can fall when they do Averis. But a person always has to know that no matter how far they have fallen, the little door is open for tshuva. That's what that hay is all about. That little door on top. There's taka, no floor. A person can fall very far. But that door is open for tshuva. Nobody should ever give up on themselves. And if that's the case, Avram was the father of all the Balei tshuva. And Sarah Imenu was the mother of all the women who did tshuva. That's why they both were given a hay. Because hay represents tshuva. Now we're going to see something fascinating. Something in the Tur Arachayim you wouldn't believe. It sounds like a Hasidic Shavart. Take a look at the Tur Arachayim, Simon Kuftes Vav. And he says, the bracha Hashivenu, which is the bracha of tshuva in Shemin Esra. What number bracha is that? That's number 5. Of course, it has to be 5 because hey is 5. And he says it begins with a hey, Hashivenu Avinu, and it ends with a hey, Haraitza V'tshuva. Hey at the beginning, hey at the end, 5 and 5 is 10. He says that's Aseres Yemei Tshuva. That's what the Torah is telling us. That's what's all in the hay. Avram Avinu has the hay. Sarah has the hay. Hashivenu begins with a hay and it ends with a hay because that's Aseres Yemei Tshuva. It's the 5th bracha. So you can imagine if one letter has such significance in a name, imagine what a whole name, if you have the capability to understand the significance of every part of your name. And that which Rabbi Shulman mentioned is 100% correct. It's brought in Svarim in the name of the Arizal. Shekol Hashemoy Sheba Oilam Einam B'mikra. Every name that you were given, Yaakov Yehuda, whatever name you have, it wasn't that just you were named after an uncle or you were named after a Zayda. There's plenty of uncles and there's plenty of Zaydas. But you were given hakol b'haskomas me'ita yizborach. Every parent is blessed with a ruach hakodesh that they don't even realize. Shegolu lafon of ma'inyin ha'ish upulosai. Because your name defines you. That's why Hashem made it that the parents should choose that name. So I'll tell you an unbelievable story. I have a very dear friend. Doesn't want I should mention his name. Lives out of town. Silver Springs, Maryland. If you want to do your homework, you'll find out who it is. But anyway, listen to this. This fellow in Silver Springs, a Rebbe in Yeshiva, his wife already had a few children, and she was expecting a baby. And she went to the obstetrician during the 9 months of pregnancy, routine test. By a routine test, the doctor says to her, I got to speak to you and your husband together. She knew already it's bad. Calls in the husband, and he says, you know, I hate to tell you this, but the tests show that there's a very good chance that the child that your wife is about to give birth to is going to have spina bifida. Spina bifida is a terrible disease. It affects the... There could be water on the brain. It can affect the spine. And in the worst case scenario, the child will be in a wheelchair all his life. They had other tests, and every test was more conclusive than the one before. And sure enough, when the little boy was born, they noticed right away that this child, Taka Nebuch, had that terrible, terrible machla. And of course, they couldn't have the bris right away. And he was wondering what name, when they have the bris, should he give to his child. So he had remembered, he thought that he had heard from, in the name of the stipler, that when a child of challenge is born and the person knows that this child is going to be challenged, they should use a name like Baruch, because Baruch means blessing. And it should be a Baruch, Hashem should bless this child. But he didn't really want to use Baruch because he had already a daughter named Bracha. So he called his Rosh Hashiva. His Rosh Hashiva in the previous years had been Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky in Philadelphia. And Rav Shmuel told him, you know something? You should use Baruch anyway. I know you're not thrilled with it, but that's not what the stipler said. That when a child is challenged, should use a name like Baruch. Okay, wasn't thrilled with it. Still, they didn't have the bris yet. A few weeks later, it was Friday afternoon. He comes to shul early. He's so despondent. It's Parsha Shlach. He comes to shul. Nobody's there. He opens up a sefer. The first sefer that he saw was Rav Shamsher Mefol Hirsch. So he starts reading on the Parsha. Rav Shamsher Mefol Hirsch, in the beginning of Parsha Shlach, asks this question. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu only change the name of Yeshua? If Moshe Rabbeinu was worried, and he had a Ruach HaKodesh, that the spies were going to say something that was not right, he should have changed either everybody's name, or maybe even just Kalev. Why did he change Yeshua? He knew who the tzaddikim were, and he still felt that he had to change Yeshua's name, so he either let him change Kalev or everybody. Why just Yeshua? So Rav Shamsher Mefol Hirsch says a very interesting chiddush. He said, Moshe Rabbeinu's goal was that Yeshua should be so inspirational and so convincing to the other 11 Meraglim that he will be the one who will see the way you're supposed to see Eretz Yisrael, and he'll be the inspiration for everybody else. That's why he only changed Yeshua's name. He should be the role model. This fellow sees this and he decides, I'm going to name my son Yeshua. My son, he said, is going to be the poster boy for every Jewish challenged kid in America. Every parent will see how we raise this child. He'll be a happy child. He's going to be the example for every kid that's challenged in America. We're going to name him Yeshua. He goes home, he tells his wife. His wife loves the idea. 2 nights before the bris, his father calls him up. And we're going to talk later about grandparents mixing in, but that's later. So his father calls him up. He says, does your wife have a chiyuv as far as the name? He says, no, nobody has. She doesn't have a chiyuv. He says, well, you have a chiyuv. He said, I have a chiyuv. Who do I have to name after? He said, well, you got to name me after Uncle Bernie. He said, I got to name me after Uncle Bernie. What do you mean? I mean, he was a nice guy, but you know, like I wasn't that close with him. He said, yeah, but he passed away just a few months ago and there's nobody to use his name. He said, you know, like, why are you putting this pressure on me? Why do I have to use his name? He said, by the way, what was his name? He says, Yeshua Baruch. Could you believe? And that's what they named the kid. Now I can tell you, I was at Yeshua Baruch's Bar Mitzvah. He is the happiest, go luckiest kid that you could ever imagine. He just graduated high school this year. He's the type of kid in his wheelchair. He races down the streets of Silver Springs, beating those kids that are running. Purim, everybody comes. He's the leader. And he goes all around the houses. An incredible, incredible child, this Yeshua Baruch. And his parents are just absolutely extraordinary. And that's how they raised this child. He's a role model for everybody else who knows him. Listen to this story. This lady tells me she's on the way to the hospital. They had decided already they were going to name, they knew it was a girl, they were going to name her Sarah Malka. No question, her and her husband was pushing. They were going to name the daughter Sarah Malka. They knew it was a girl. She says to me, I have no idea. I have no idea why all of a sudden, as we're driving to the hospital, it comes into my head, you know, I want to give this kid a modern Israeli name as well. We're not going to take away Sarah Malka. It's a fault, Marianne, I want to use Atara. Atara means crown. That's what I want to use. So she says, I'm driving in the car. You know, my husband is driving. We're on the way to the hospital. I say to him, do you mind? You know, it just occurred to me, I'd like to name the name Atara. He says, yeah, that's nice. So what? She'll have three names? Yeah, it's okay. Atara Sarah Malka. Fine. The baby's born on whatever one day of the week, and then on Thursday, they give the name in shul. That afternoon, her father, who's out of town, calls her up and says, what'd you name the baby? She says, we named the little girl Atara Sarah Malka. And there's silence. At first she thought, maybe her father's angry, but she hears he's crying. He says, why did you name Atara Sarah Malka? He said, well, is there anything wrong with the name? He says, no. He says, just the opposite. Last night, he says, my aunt, Crandall, which means crown, called me. She came to me in a dream. She said, Fischel, don't forget me. Nobody has named after me. I wasn't going to call you. I'm going to call you, put pressure on you. to name? A name that means crown? But she was crying to me. She said she died in the Holocaust and nobody named after her. And now you tell me that just stop in the Wilderrhein. You chose the name Atara, which means crown. Which shows that every name, we think that we gave a name for this specific reason, but there's a Ruach HaKodesh that's involved. It's very interesting. The Pasuk tells us in Shmuel Aleph, Perik Aleph Pasuk Kof, Vatikra Eshemoi Shmuel. She called him Shmuel. Chana didn't have a child for many years. And the Pasuk tells us, Kimi Hashem She'iltiv. She'iltiv comes from the Lashon Shaila, the Mitzurais tells us. She asked, she pleaded for this child. You know, she was married many years, she had no children. Penina had 10 children, it was so painful for her. She asked for this child. So the Chassam Sefer asked Akasha. She's saying why she named this child. Why didn't she name him Shaul? She said, Kimi Hashem She'iltiv. I asked about him from Hashem. So she should have named Shaul. Why did she name Shmuel? Now listen to this, and all those that are named Shaul should not have Chalishas Adas, because we're going to fix this in a second. But I just want to tell you the Chassam Sefer. The Chassam Sefer writes, I am positive that the reason that Chana did not name her child Shaul is because she knew in the Torah, one of the Alufei of Esav at the end of Parshas Vayishlach is Shaul, and he was a Rosha. So she didn't want to use the name Shaul. So she used the name Shmuel that has the Oisyeh Shaul in it. And as my Rebbe Rav David Cohen said, it has the Oisyeh Shaul Mekel. All those letters are in the name Shmuel. Shaul Mekel. That means I asked from Hashem. So that's the Chassam Sefer. He's telling us that's why she didn't use the name Shaul. So what about Shaul HaMelech? What about his mother? So the Chassam Sefer writes something frightening. He says, I believe, and he says, and I'm positive of this. That's why Shaul had a terrible death, because he carried the name of a Rasha. Imagine that. That's why he had a terrible death. So now what about everybody else who's named Shaul today? How do we name people Shaul? Teretz is because over the years there have been many tzaddikim that had the name Shaul. So we're not naming after anymore. At that time there was nobody Shaul except Alufei, the general of Esav. So he couldn't use that name of the Rasha. But over the years, and that's what Rav Moshe says, if let's say that somebody has to name somebody in the family. You have to name a child and you have pressure. And you're going to name after somebody that's a Mechal Shabbos. It was a grandfather, an uncle, and they're putting pressure on you. You have to use that name. And you don't want to use that name because that person was a Mechal Shabbos. So Rav Moshe says, have in mind a tzaddik that had that name. Or a tzaddikis that have that name. So that when the Moel or whoever is saying, Yikar Shemai B'Yisrael, and you tell him that name, David, Shlomo, whatever it is, you have in mind Shlomo HaMelech, David HaMelech, have a name of tzaddik. So even though they think that you're naming after somebody else, but you have in mind, and it all goes over what you have in mind. The Gemara tells us something very interesting. La'olam yivdoik adam b'sheimais. A person has to all be careful in Tanchuma, actually. Dvorim and Hazinu Zayin. A person has to be very careful the name that they call their child that should be after a tzaddik. Ki l'pa'amim Hashem goyrem toiv or goyrem ra. Sometimes the name can be the cause that good happens to this person, or sometimes chas v'shalom can happen bad. I want to tell you a story. It's amazing. The Kapishin Tzur Rebbe once met the Ponovizhirov. And they were talking. And the Ponovizhirov told him that he had three sons, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yankov. And they didn't have a good end. And the Kapishin Tzur Rebbe told him that it's a bad mazel to have three children named Avram, Yitzchak, and Yankov. We would have thought that was a wonderful thing. For whatever reason, in Kabbalah, it's a bad thing. Some say you shouldn't have them three in a row, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And the Ponovizhirov said that he never had known of something like that. If you take a look, it's in the Tamei HaMenhogim. Not to have children, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that before you name your child, you have to consult your Rav. Now, your Rav may say something different than another Rav or another Rebbe, but that's okay. You have to follow who you follow. Because there's always going to be Chalukah Deis, especially in names. And I'll give you an example. There's a wonderful Rav down in Savannah, Georgia. His name is Rabbi Slatus. Literally has turned over the whole community. One of the reasons Rabbi Slatus went down to start the community in Savannah was the Satmar Rebbe, Rabbi Yoel, had given him a bracha, him and his wife, and told him they should go there and they would have atzlocha. And they taka went and they had tremendous atzlocha. So after, many, many years later, after they were there for many years, the Rebbe had passed away and Mrs. Slatus had a little boy. She wanted to name the baby Yoel. But she was going to name the baby not only Yoel, but she was going to name the baby Yoel Levi because her grandfather was Levi, but she wanted to have the name of the Rebbe because he had given her the bracha. So she called the next Rebbe, the one who took over for Rabbi Yoel, and said, I want to use the name Yoel Levi. You know, is that okay? He said, no, you can't use Yoel Levi. She said, why can't I use Yoel Levi? He said, no, because you can't use a name that the last letter of the first name is the same as the first letter of the second name, because the neshamas get confused together. So you can't use Yoel Levi. She said, okay, I'll use Levi Yoel. She can't do that either. Right? Because Levi ends with a yud, and Yoel begins with a yud. Now, you're going to ask me, but there's a lot of people. What about Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Baditcheva? Right? He had a yud at the end and a yud at the beginning. And what about Rabbi Chaim Meir, who's the Vizhitzer Rebbe? And how many girls do we know named Rochel Leah? But if you're a Satma Chosid or a Chassidista, so you're not going to use those letters where the last letter of the first name is the same as the first letter of the second name. But you have to ask. You have to ask because these are Kabbalah and Yonim, and a person has to know. Now I'll tell you something that the Satma Rebbe once said. Incredible. See, he was once collecting for a Moisid, for the Satma Moisid, and somebody gave him $47. So he said to the guy, what's $47? He said, Rebbe, it's begamatria, your name, Yoel. So he said to him in Yiddish, in the Heim Fleck Mechif in Yoelish. So you can be sure the guy paid the extra $300. Now, many of the Britain that I do are for people that are not from. And many of them, they don't have a Jewish name. You can't imagine how many kids out there in Long Island are named Pesach, right? Because, you know, they need a P. I tell them, I got a great name for you. But anyway. But I remember one time I came to a house in Glen Cove, Long Island, early in the morning. And I knew the people were not religious. I knock on the door. All of a sudden, I hear a dog barking on the other side. And I hear the lady yell, Shlomo, get down. Now, I couldn't believe that. Hey, come on. This is impossible. So I thought maybe I didn't hear right. Okay, I'm about to do the bris, and the dog walks into the room. He's, you know, rubbing my knee. I said, excuse me, maybe you can get the dog out of here. It's not a way Amoyel wants to do a bris. And she says, Shlomo, get out. I couldn't believe this. So after the bris, I mean, they didn't even know a Jewish name for the child, and I had to give him a Jewish name. So I said to the lady, you know, I can't believe this. You know, like, how did your dog get a name like Shlomo? She says, Rabbi, you could see we're not religious. Yeah, I said, I could see that. He says, you know, but the first religious experience my husband and I had, we were in Kent State University. Shlomo Kalbach came to give a concert. So we named our dog after him. Imagine that. You'll never have a dog named after you. Now, my father once came to a bris. Now, you know, I'm a fifth generation Moyel. Now, Baruch Hashem, I have a son-in-law that I'm Moyelim. So it's in the family. My father once came to a bris. And he said to the father also, not a frum guy, he said, what's your Jewish name? He said, I don't know. He says, was your father here? He's not going to know either. So he goes to the grandfather of the baby, and he says, do you remember what you named your son? He says, no, I don't remember what I named him. So my father said to the father of the baby, your grandfather, where was he from? Oh, he was from Europe. So did you know him? Yeah. So he figured out if he's from Europe, Mastami called him by his Jewish name. He said, what'd your grandfather call you? He used to call me Meshugana. My father once had this situation where he said to someone, you know what, you want to name after the grandfather. What was his Jewish name? He said, I don't know. So he said, you know, he passed away. He says, why don't you go to the cemetery and you copy off the name, you know, copy the letters of his Jewish name. So the guy comes to my father and he says, here's the name, Tintzava. Tintzava is on the bottom. Tehei Nafshei Tzrura B'Tzrur HaChayim. Those were the only Hebrew letters that he had. And I remember I once came again in Long Island and they needed, a name with an L. I know they're going to name the baby Land, so I don't know, whatever. So I said, you know, you could use Levi, you know, Reuven, Shimon, Levi. She said, Rabbi, I'm new from this area. I don't know anybody around here. But let me tell you this. I was once called by a frum family to check the baby before the bris. Now, I saw, as soon as I came to the house, that was not the reason that they called me. They called me because they were having a very serious discussion about the name. This fellow, frum boy, was very close to his grandfather. His grandfather's name was Yaakov, and he wanted to name the baby Yaakov. But the mother was also a very frum lady. Her father's middle name was Yaakov, but nobody ever knew that. Everybody called him Alan J. Nobody knew his middle name was Yaakov, right? But she said, I can't name my son Yaakov when my father has the name Yaakov. We know Sephardim name after living grandparents. But Ashkenazim don't, so it's a bad mazel. Now, I don't know how I thought of this. It's only the Rabbi Shlalem put it into my head. And maybe he put it into my head because it was between Pesach and Shavuos when this incident happened. And I said to them, who is the one that we talk about more than anyone else during Pesach and Shavuos? We talk about Rabbi Akiva. 24,000 Talmidim died. Yemei Asfira. Use the name Akiva because it has the Oisiyos Yaakov in it. If you write it out, Akiva, and you write it out, you'll see. Ayin Kuf Yud Beis Aleph is how we spell it in Bavli. It has the Oisiyos Akiva, and it has the Oisiyos Yaakov, and that's taka what they did. Now I want to tell you another amazing story about this name. There was a Rishon who once had to write a get. And we know, Rachmana Litzlan, if there has to be a get, even if one letter is wrong in the get, the whole get is puzzle. And the fellow who had to give the get, his name was Akiva. And there's a machlokes, because in Bavli, Akiva is spelled with an aleph at the end. In the Yerushalmi, Akiva is spelled with a hey at the end. And this Adam Godel, the Rishon, was not sure how to write the get. That night, if you have a pencil and paper, write this out, you won't believe it. That night he had a dream, and he dreamt of this pasuk, Or Zorua Latzadik Ule Yishrei Lev Simcha. What is the last letter of the word Zorua? Ayin, Latzadik, Yishrei, Lev, Simcha. Akiva with a hey. And the Or, that Reish is Reb, Rabbi Akiva. He was so nispoil, he used that dream, he wrote the get with Akiva, and he named his sefer Or Zerua. The Rishon Or Zerua writes this in the Hakdama. That's why he named the sefer Or Zerua, because of this dream. Now, I once told this story, together with the previous story that I told about Akiva. I told it out of town. I can't say where, because the fellow, as you'll see in a moment, was very mocked, but he's very sensitive about this issue. He comes over to me after the whole speech, and he says, Rabbi, that story that you said about the Or Zerua was the most inspirational story. I said, you know, it's a nice story about the dream, but I don't get the inspiration exactly. You know, it's an interesting story. He says, no, let me tell you what happened to me. Listen to this. It's amazing. 2 years ago, he had a little boy. He named him Akiva. He said a few months before, he says the baby got very, very sick. He was so sick, he was deathly ill. And they took him to all kinds of hospitals and they did all kinds of tests. And finally, they told him, right before Sukkot, they said to him that on a particular day, which was going to be Hashanah Rabbah, they were going to do a test and they would know the result in the afternoon. And if the result was good, then the child would be able to be healed and it would be on the way. But if Chas V'Shalom it was bad, it was terrible. He told me he was davening in Shul Halil Hashanah Rabbah. He was holding the lulav and the esrig, and he was crying. He told me he was in the middle of Halil. By Hoidul Hashem Kitoiv Kili Elam Chaste, he just fell apart. He couldn't go further. Hoidul Hashem, Hashem, I thank you. I have a child. Please help me. Show me a sign, something. And he was just crying, saying the Hoidu. And then he looked down at the sitter. It's hard to believe this, but it's amazing. He looked down at the siddur, and the next words in the siddur were, "Min hametzar korosika." Min hametzar korosika means from a tight situation, I called to you, Hashem. Ononi ba'mer chavko. You answered me in a very expansive way. He tells me, he looked at the words, Hameitzar, Korosi, Ko, Ononi, Bamerchav. The first letters of those words, if you write it out, is Akiva with a hey. Could you imagine? He said he was waiting for a sign from Hashem. He saw these words right where he was stuck in Hallel. He said he knew already. He knew. Anoni b'merchav ko and taka, the child is Baruch Hashem making progress. And the test showed that everything would be fine. Amazing. That's why that story of the Ur Zeruah with the hay, Akiva with the hay, was so inspirational. Who has the right to the name? Is it the father? Is it the mother? And I want to say something, I hope nobody minds. Whether it's the father or the mother, we'll discuss that in a minute, but it surely is not the grandparents. Never, ever should you mix in as a grandparent when it comes to giving a name. Any couple that's old enough to have a baby is old enough to name them. If you as a grandparent want to name a child, go out and have another one. I cannot tell you how much machloikis and pain and families ripped asunder for months because grandparents mixed in when it comes to giving a name. The children are blessed with a certain Ruach HaKodesh. Of course, it's very painful if they don't name after your mother or your father. But they have a reason. They may have discussed it. For whatever reason, it's their child. I once had a situation where a guy called me up the night before Bris and he said, Rabbi, I don't know who to make Sandik for my baby tomorrow. I said, what's the question? He said, it's either between my father and my father-in-law. I can't decide. I said, well, let me help you. Was your father ever Sandik before? Of course, he's had 10 grandchildren and 7 of them are boys. He's been Sandik 7 times already. I said, what about your father-in-law? No, this is his first grandson. I said, doesn't it seem obvious to you that the father-in-law should be the Sandik? He said, Rabbi, that's what I thought. But my father just got off the phone with me. He told me that last night the baby came to him in a dream and told him he wants him to be Sandik. I said, what language did he speak in? Imagine a chutzpah of a grandfather calling like that. Even if he had the dream. So when it comes to names, about who has the right, and I know there's Sephardis here, and I hope they don't mind, but by Sephardis, the men have everything. First boy, first girl, it's all the same. They get everything first. The husbands get everything first. But by the Ashkenazim, it's different. By the Ashkenazim, usually the wife is the one that has the first name. Usually. Why? And there's two reasons given. One, because the first child is usually a very difficult labor. And so therefore, in deference to everything that she's gone through, so she has the right to the first name. And others say, especially when her parents are supporting the young couple, so that should be for the first 5 names in some cases, right? But in all seriousness, but I want to tell you a story. This is one of the greatest stories that I've ever heard. I'm in the middle of writing now, Mitzvah Shem, a new Maggid book, Mitzvah Shem, should come out in a few months, hopefully by next Hanukkah. This story is going to be right in there. It's one of the most incredible stories that you'll ever hear. There was a man in Tveris Yerushalayim, right? Rabbi Hamnik, and his son certainly knew him, Rabbi Michal Birnbaum, right? Big tzaddik, wonderful person, a heilig yid, the mashgiach. He passed away. He has a grandson in Lakewood. His grandson had a little boy. Everybody was positive. There's no question about it. They're going to name the baby after Rabbi Michal. He was a big tzaddik. And especially, this was the grandson's second child, and the first child was named after the wife's side, after an uncle or whatever. But definitely, you know, there's no question. And what happened at the bris? They named the baby after the wife's grandfather. Nobody could believe it. By the Suda, listen to what the father said. He said, I know everybody's wondering why we chose the name and we didn't name after Rav Michal. So he said, because before Rav Michal passed away, and I spoke to his daughter, Mrs. Siegfried, Rav Michal said he knows that he's going to die. And he knows that there will be grandchildren that will have babies that want to name after him. But he wants to say this. If the other side has a grandfather that died, and the almana is still alive, name after that grandfather, because it'll be a nachas ruach to that almana. Imagine the sensitivity of an odom gadol. His wife had already passed away, so he's willing to give up that his name should not be used now, hopefully it'll be used later, but the almana will have a nachas ruach that they're naming after her husband. Which brings me to another situation, a very personal situation. What happens when a father dies young? My father died, he was 47. Do you name after somebody that passed away young? So Rav Moshe has a very interesting tshuva, and this is such an important tshuva to remember, because unfortunately these things happen often. And Rav Moshe says that if somebody was married and they had children, it makes no difference what age they died. We're talking if they died of illness, whether it's cancer or leukemia, whatever, it makes no difference. Nobody lives forever. That's not considered Reya Mazle. That's not considered a bad mazel if somebody died below 60 or whatever age. He says, Shlomo HaMelech died, he was 52. Darizel died, he was 36. Yechizkiah HaMelech died, he was 54. Shmuel died, he was 52. That's a relatively young age. But if a person was married and had children and they died a natural death, then that's not considered bad mazel. That means that they finished doing whatever Hashem felt they have to do in the world and you could name after them. And especially, Rabbi David Cohen mentioned this to me, and Rabbi Yashiv says the same thing. If the almana is alive, that person, the wife of that person is alive. It's kibud ein. Imagine the nachas ruach that she has when you name after her husband. Now, if never somebody didn't have children, that's a different story. Somebody was killed in a terrible accident, that's a different story. So then you add a name, or you add some letters to the name. But otherwise, a natural death, it makes no difference what the age is. It's very interesting. The Yamshel Shlema brings this. The name Shneor. Where did the name Shneor come from? And, you know, we know Rav Shneor Kotler, of course, but obviously he was probably named after somebody who had the name, because the name goes back many, many years. And he writes that there were two, that there was a couple that was married. One had a grandfather who died whose name was Meir, and the other had a grandfather whose name was Uri. And they both mean light. So they created the name Shneor, two lights, for Uri and Meir. Now the question is, can you name after two different people? This is something that happens b'chol yom. Today in America, most children have two names. Especially boys. Most boys today have two names. Many girls also have two names. So the Chazon Ish held that if you name after two separate people, that's not called naming after either of them. That's what the Chazon Ish held. But obviously there are others who hold that if you name after two separate people, it is considered naming after, because we see that that's the Minig Alma. But certainly if somebody learned in the Kol Chazon Ish, they wouldn't name after two separate people. But there are others who paskin that you can. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky told me, it's not like I heard it from anybody else, that if you name a child two names, you should call him by both names. That's why all his children have only one name. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Avram, Rabbi Yoman, they have one name. Because you call the child by the names that they were given. Now, I want to tell you a story that happened. You can't paskin from this. My Rebbe Rav David told me you can't paskin from this. Rabbi Peretinsky, who was an Odom Gadol Ad Miyoid, also told me you can't paskin. But I know that not only this, what I'm going to tell you now, saved me once. But I saw it in the Sefer, but I never found it again, so they wouldn't let me print it in the Bris Milah Sefer. But I'm just telling you what happened. I remember I was once in Long Island, again, people that are not from. And the question was, they were going to name the baby. The father and the mother got into an argument. And the question was, should you name the baby Moshe Yosef or Yosef Moshe? They both had grandfathers. One was Moshe, one was Yosef. And this one wanted that one first, and this one, they wanted the other one first. And I knew they were never going to call the kid Moshe Yosef or Yosef Moshe anyway. It was going to be Mark Jason or whatever, you know? So like, what difference is which one you're going to name first? But, you know, it was a matter of pride. Now, I knew how to get out of there because I had another bris. So I wasn't going to stand there and argue with them all day. But I remember that I saw in a sefer, I could never find it. And Rabbi David says it has no mocker. Rabbi Peretinsky, Zolzangazunt, also said it has no mocker. He says, but I saw it in the sefer someplace that if you have a machloikis about which name should go first, you use the name that came in the Torah first. So therefore, over here, we use Yosef Moshe. And I said to the lady, I said, listen, it's not anybody's fault. Yosef came before Moshe, so you named the baby Yosef Moshe. Now, one of my favorite names, Moshe Mordechai. How did the name Moshe Mordechai come to be? I'm going to tell you now, then you'll see. Of course, it's true. Any child that's born Zion Adar, has his bris on Purim. Isn't that incredible? Because that's the eighth day. I'm positive that's how the name Moshe Mordechai came to be. And that's why over there, Moshe, he came anyway before Mordechai. But Moshe is the Yortzeit Zayin Adar, that was his birthday. And 8 days later is Purim. So that's Moshe Mordechai, that's how the name came to be. I want to tell you an amazing thing that happened. Tonight, you know, Rabbi Reisman gives that great shiur in Tanakh, so I appreciate that all of you came here. Otherwise, you could have gone there. But Rabbi Reisman told me he had this great situation, unbelievable. In the Kollel, in Torah Das, there was a young guy who had a baby, and he did not like his grandfather, so he was not going to name his baby after his grandfather. But he got a lot of pressure. Let's just make believe his name was David, okay? Just a generic name. So when it came to giving the name, he had no choice but to give David because he felt all that family pressure. But he bedafka had in mind, it's not after his grandfather, it's after, let's say, David HaMelech, or, you know, a big tzaddik by the name of Rab David. Fine. After the bris, his grandmother comes over to him, says, "My darling, it's so nice of you that you're named after Zaidi. I want to give you a check." And she gives him a check for $500. So this Kailo guy goes to Rabbi Reisman. He said, "Can I cash this check?" You know, I bedafka had in mind that it's not my grandfather. I'm not going to tell it to my grandmother, but I bedafka. He says, "Of course, you can't cash the check." Okay. 3 months later, his bubby calls him up and she says, "You know, I was going through the books and I see that you didn't cash the check." He says, "Bubby, I didn't want to buy the name. I don't want to, you know, get money just because I gave the name." She says, "No, I was going to give it to you anyway." He called Rabbi Reisman right away. He goes to Rabbi Reisman. He said, "What do I do now?" She said she was going to give it anyway. So Rabbi Reisman said, "I'll call Rav Pam." So he calls Rav Pam. Rav Pam said, "In Dine Mominus, if she said she was going to give it anyway, you could cash the check." Within 24 hours, he cashed the check. Tell you another story about names, and then we'll end with a beautiful thought. You know, I had the great schus, Mr. Shmulowitz is here, we went to many, many different places in Europe. One of the places that we spoke about the Netziv in Volozhin. And I told him an amazing story. In Volozhin, the mother of all yeshivas, unfortunately, there were some boys in the yeshiva that were maskilim. They were not religious boys. They were boys that tried to get boys away from learning. They should have other interests. And they gave the Rosh Hashiva a lot of problems. It's hard to believe, but that's what they did. And the Netziv, Rab Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, he was the Rosh Hashiva together with Rab Chaim Soloveitchik. Those years that they were the Rosh Hashivas was the heyday of the Volozhiner Yeshiva. So there was a boy who wanted to do something terrible. And he was a fabulous artist and a fabulous forger. And he forged a letter as though the Netziv wrote it. And he wrote that the Netziv, as if the Netziv is giving a letter to all the people in the community and telling them that they should send money to Eretz Yisrael, to people in Eretz Yisrael, through Turkey, which was illegal. You were not allowed to send money to Eretz Yisrael from Russia. But here you have the Rav of the Rosh Hashiva is giving an order to all the people that they should do that. And this guy goes to the police, this Bocher, and he says, "Look what the rabbi did. He's going against the government law." Well, that's all they needed because, you know, they would love to get the rabbis in trouble. And so they arrested the Netziv. They arrested the Netziv and they brought him to a court case and they show him the letter. The Netziv is a very honest person. He takes a look. He says, "That's my handwriting, but I didn't write the letter." I say, "Yeah, what does that mean? It's your handwriting, but you didn't write the letter?" He says, "I'm telling you, I didn't write it, but it is my handwriting." So they made a whole court case. They were going to throw him in jail. He was arrested. And at the case, the Netziv showed a phenomenal thing. He said, "Take a look at the signature." And he brought many of the tshuvas that he wrote. His name was Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. So the last yud of Tzvi, right? The next word was Yehuda, was a yud. But he didn't write two yuds together. He only wrote one yud. And that forger didn't pick it up. Imagine that. Because he was thinking of Tumah, didn't think of Kedusha. Now, we could speculate why the Netziv did not write the two yuds together. Maybe because it's printed in Siddurim as Hashem Hashem, I don't know, it doesn't say. But that's how the Netziv was saved, because he showed all the tshuvas. And Yutaka, you see in the biographies, you have the picture of the Netziv signature. It's very clear, it's only one yud. Taka, when I wrote the book about the trip, I took a picture of the signature and I showed it over there that he wrote only one yud. Here's a great, great story. And then we'll end with a beautiful thought. This story happened in Passaic, in Rabbi Zupnik's shul. It happened on Purim. Twins. It's wonderful. Imagine twins is a great simcha. Twins on Purim. It's unbelievable. Yehudim. It's amazing. So the place is packed. And we read the Megillah. And we're about to do the bris. Of course, I went to check the babies. And the din is that when you have twins, you're supposed to do the older boy first. And you keep the second boy in the other room so that the brachas of the first boy are only for the first boy, because every boy is entitled to his full set of brachas. And then it says in Shulchan Aruch, you say Hamalach HaGoyal in between, so there's a hefsik, and then you bring in the second baby. There were two Zaydas, two grandfathers. Each one wanted to be Sandik for the one that was going to be named from his side of the family. They bring in the first boy, the Zayda sitting down, he's ready, he's on the Sandik's chair. I open up the diaper. That's right. I say to the father, it's the wrong baby. He says, how do you know? He says, I'm a moyel, believe me. I checked the babies. This is the younger one. It's not the older one. Well, he lost it. He lost it. And now the shul is very big. And he starts yelling at his wife on the other end of the mechitza. You brought in the wrong baby. You sent in the wrong baby. And Rabbi Zupnik said, the din is, ein mavir na la mitzvahs. You cannot take away this baby. This baby is here, ready to do his bris. You cannot send him away. This is the baby that we got to do first. So there was tremendous tension. There was tremendous tension. Let me just turn this over for my dear friend. Okay. There was tremendous tension. And then again, Hashem put something in my head. I said, Rabbi Isai, it had to happen this way. Because today is Purim v'nahapachu. It had to be just the opposite. And it broke the ice. And then, so when I told my Rebbe, Rav David, I told him the story. He said, I'll tell you why it happened. I said, oh, really? He says, yeah, to show the grandfathers. You don't only have to be the sandik, the one that's naming on your side of the family. A grandfather has to love all his grandchildren, no matter what side they're named for. So I just want to end just with this thought. I went to meet Menachem Avil, someone in this neighborhood. Her father was a moyel many, many years ago, and so therefore I really didn't know her husband, but I went to meet Menachem Avil, her, because I knew her father, Shalom. Her name is Mrs. Jolte. I didn't realize that her husband is unbelievable in gematrias. You know, we were sitting and talking, and then as we're about to leave, he says to me, he says, you know, I understand you wrote a book on Bris Mila. He says, you know all the balaturims on Bris Mila? I said, I think I do, but I was wrong. He showed me one right in the beginning. Right in the beginning of Bereshis, it was embarrassing. It says, Ve'es ha'or ki toiv. Ve'es ha'or, and the light, that it was good. He says, the last letters, the balaturim says, Es is tof, ha'or is resh, ki is yud, toiv is beis, that you flip it around, it's bris. Bris is that light. That's good. So Ves Arkitoiv is bris. I said, well, thank you very much. I didn't know that balaturim. I appreciate it. Of course, I went home and I underlined it in my chumash. He said, wait, I'm not finished with you. I said, oh, really? He says, no, because you know Ves Arkitoiv is begamatra. Exactly. Pesach Yosef Kron. So I thank you for inviting me, Rabbi Shulman. Thank you for the Pesach and Yosef. And I thank you all for coming. Good luck. Thank you for listening.